Good evening and welcome everybody. This is Mordechai Plasker. Thank you all for joining us, the Erev Pesach Shir. So tonight's going to be a double Shir, both on the Parsha of Metzora, as well as on two themes in Pesach. The first will be three different takes on Behisha Amda, and one major one on Arba Banim, Keneged Arba Banim, Baruch HaMakom Baruch Hu. So we begin the Parsha with the concept of the Shtei Sorim, the two birds. What's interesting about this is that the Torah tells us that even though two birds collected, only one of them actually had shechita, whereas the other one was set free. And the process is also a little bit interesting. It's just to recap, we take the first bird, which is white, and we stuffed it, and then we take the second, and we immerse it into the blood of the first, and then we send it away. And the question that is quite obvious that you probably were thinking about over Shabbos is, why do we do things like this? If we wanted to take two birds, why not just check both of them? Why do we take one and send the other away? And secondly, what's the significance of dipping the second bird into the blood of the first that was just shechted? So to address this question, Chazal bring down that the first bird is meant to say that the reason why these birds were selected was because there's a lot of Lashon Hara. So what the birds are chirping, and similar to Lashon Hara, people are chirping. So when there's a lot of chirping, what's the messaging there? We have to stop the chirping. So therefore, the first bird gets shechted. What's the messaging in the second? And the second bird is that a guy is sitting on his porch in his backyard and he's relaxing and enjoying a beautiful Shabbos morning with learning a sefer with a Bar Torah. And along comes this beautiful white bird, and he takes a look and he notices that on this bird there are these, you know, red splotches indicating blood. And then he realizes that, hey, that must be the bird that was sent away. And it's telling me a message that whereas the first bird, we all know, there was too much Lashon Hara, so therefore that has to come to an end, just like the first bird. And the second is telling me, in the time that I could be saying Lashon Hara, what could I have been doing far more productive? So, for example, I could have been chizik. I could have been giving chizik to one of my friends. I could have been learning Torah. I could have been doing something constructive as opposed to something to the contrary. And so all of us are faced with that nisayon, and it's all about how we adjust. And that second bird gives us the time and the rhyme and the reason for us to think about how we can be more productive in the future. So that's really the summation of the first aliyah. We look at the fourth aliyah, we have what's called as Tzaras HaBayis. And Tzaras HaBayis means that the Kohen has to come in and say, okay, you know, there's a Neged Tzaras, and so what's the procedure? We take down the walls of this edifice. And Chazal tells us, Rashi tells us, that behind these walls, the Amorites who had lived there beforehand didn't want to give up their property so easily when Klal Yisrael came in. So they hid their treasures behind these walls next to the beams. And when Klal Yisrael took down the foundation and they just saw the beams, they saw the treasures as well, and then they became wealthy as a result. And the question we ask ourselves is this really the way that we have to accumulate wealth, by tearing down the walls of a home? Isn't there a far more easier way to go about this? Why do we have to go through such sacrifice in order for us to achieve great things in life, to achieve greatness or riches? And so I think that I saw a beautiful thought from Rav Mordechai Miller from Gateshead. He published a sefer back in 1969 where he talks about sacrifices. And he explains that there are four people that went through several sacrifices, just as examples, but there are many, many more. The first is Avram and Haran, and then there's Moshe, and then there's Yisrael. So I just want to talk about the meaning of sacrifice and how emblematic this really is to the Jewish psyche and the Jewish way of life. Nimrod got the name because he was Moreh B'Malchus, right? Chazal tell us that the word Nimrod really refers to Moreh B'Malchus. He rebelled against HaKadosh Baruch Hu and considered himself to be a deity. And what did Avraham Avinu say? That Terach, my dear father, you think that these idols really have any power? They don't have any power. And surely Terach, you know, said, no, that's not true. So then Avraham Avinu broke all the idols and said, oh, this idol over here was jealous of all the other idols. And so he destroyed all the idols. So Terach says, no, Avraham, that's crazy. You know that these idols don't do anything. He says, exactly. So then he says, no, I can't deal with this. You know, my son, you're going to get us all in trouble over here. And so he brings him to Nimrod, and Nimrod throws him into the fire. Before Avraham goes into the fire, he literally, in his mind, he's willing to sacrifice himself on the belief that everything that he's saying is true. And that's why it says, Ekev asher shamata b'koli. The word Ekev, says Rabbi Nebuchadnezzar, is the gematria 172. How long did Avraham Avinu live? 175 years. Which means that at age 3, he was makir HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Which means that at age 3, the Medrash brings down, this story unfolded. And there was his brother Haran, right? And Haran said, wait a minute, if my brother succeeds and walks out of this unscathed, then I will follow my brother. But if he doesn't, then I'm following with Nimrod. So in terms of sacrifice, what was Haran putting on the table? Nothing. What was Avram putting on the table? Everything. And Avram came out unscathed. In fact, he didn't even feel the pinch. And he came out the way he walked in. Haran, however, didn't. And there's a lot to be said about the sacrifice that Haran did, right? We say that there's what to be said. Actually, when I have more time, I'll take you down a different road with regard to the impact that Haran had. But the messaging is quite clear. When you're fully vested in the sacrifice, you don't feel it because you get back everything that you put in. But when you're not, you really do feel it. And that's what ended up happening with Haran. If we switch gears and move forward to Moshe Rabbeinu, think about the sacrifice that Moshe Rabbeinu did as a young child. He was Moshe over the house of Paro, which means that he opened up his window shade and he saw an Egyptian beating another Egyptian. And then Chazal tell us, Vayar Kienish, right? There's nobody there, meaning Chazal say, Rashi says, that there wasn't anyone prominent that was going to descend from this Egyptian. So therefore, Moshe Rabbeinu went ahead and killed him. Now, let's think about this for a second. He could have easily closed the blinds and said, wait, this is an isolated incident. I don't really think that this is a pandemic. I don't think that this is really ubiquitous, that everyone is getting hit the same way. I have other things to be concerned about. I have a whole house to worry about. Why should I be concerned about this one Jew? If a Mitzri kills another Mitzri, then it's not so much an issue. Moshe Rabbeinu, however, decided to sacrifice his comfort of Paro's home, where he was being raised under the auspices of Paro, and then became a fugitive of the law. He gave up everything, and he fled to a foreign country, and he had a price tag on his head, and Paro wanted him. And the Medrash brings down that he was brought to the executioner, and when he raised his sword, Moshe's neck turned into a pillar of stone, and then he was able to escape. And everyone knew that Moshe was on the run. He was, you know, back in those days, he was a fugitive of the law, par excellence. And you have to think to yourself, my goodness, he sacrificed all of this for what? For one Jew? For one Mitzri? Vayar ki einish means that he saw that there was nobody else that was going to do what Moshe Rabbeinu was prepared to do, and he did it. And as a result, Moshe Rabbeinu ended up leading the Jewish people because of the great sacrifice that he took upon himself to become a fugitive of the law and leave the comfort of the palace. Yisro was another major example. Yisro said, wait a minute, I am the Kohen Midjon. I'm in charge of all of these people. I'm telling them all about idolatry, but in the end, I realize that it's all for naught. These idols don't really, you know, amount to anything at all. And so, by Yishma Yisro, what did Yisro hear? He heard Mashmua Shama. He heard about all of the Sara Makos that the Mitzvah were given. He also heard about the Kabbalah Torah. And some say he also heard about Muhammad Samalek. He heard about everything. And he decided he wanted to become close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. How? What? Where? When? He wasn't really entirely certain, but he knew that what he was doing and what he had been doing was all really for naught. So therefore, he basically became ostracized because of the sacrifice that he made. And what was it that was so great? He had 7 daughters and he didn't have anybody to marry them off to. He didn't have anybody to socialize with. He didn't have anybody to talk to. And nobody wanted to talk to him because he basically shunned everything that he had done in the past. And then later on, when Yisro comes into the camp, Moshe Rabbeinu goes out to greet him. Why? Because of the great sacrifice that Yisro had made. And not only does Moshe come out to greet him, Aaron and the Zekanim and all Knesset Yisrael come out to greet Yisro. Why was that all necessary? The Fum Tzar Agra, in the relationship of how much sacrifice a person puts into something, is what a person gets out of something. The complete sacrifice. We close out with Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva, as he was being killed by the Romans with these terrible iron claws that was tearing apart his flesh, he said that, V'hapil es Hashem lakecha, I never understood these words. You would think the Talmidim ran over and said, now is the time to say the Shema Mefarash and to do something miraculous. And Rabbi Akiva said, no, this is the time when I can actually experience the sacrifice that I wish for. My whole life was to be able to come close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu in this way. And if you think about it, Rabbi Akiva didn't feel any pain, much like Avraham Avinu didn't feel any pain, because it was a 100% sacrifice. And Rabbi Akiva's neshama yatzah b'shalom, and he was mukhan l'olam haba, right? And that's what the Gemara says in Chagiga on Daf Kesvav. So we all know about people that sacrifice, and I think it's a tremendous nisayon to go through this, but that's the reason why HaKadosh Baruch Hu asks us to destroy the home. Because in the relationship of how much sacrifice we do in fulfilling the words of Hashem by tearing down the home and finding this treasure, we will find that when we do a complete sacrifice of ourselves in helping others, that not only do we get repaid one for one, but we also have more than enough to help us rebuild the home into a far more luxurious state than it ever had been when we first had laid eyes upon it. And so that's the reason why we have this, what we call Tzaras Habayis. And who is the person, as we said in the prior week, that declares a person to be Tameh and that the person has to declare his state of Tumah? He declares his state of Tumah because he is saying, I need help. I don't have a way of controlling my mouth. It is literally, it just flies right out of my mouth. I can't help myself. So he needs help. And so he goes out of the camp. And just like Miriam, we know you need help. So we're sending you away for a little bit to lament the fact that you do need this time for yourself. And you're not going to be surrounded by anybody, so you can't speak poorly about anybody. But we're not leaving or not journeying on any place until you rejoin the camp. So although a person may be exiled temporarily, they're never fully removed from the Knesset Yisrael. And that's the reason why we have the Kohen doing it, because the Kohen himself is an Oev Shalom Vero Dev Shalom. And the pain that a Kohen experiences in telling somebody they have to leave the camp is the type of person that you want to receive that news from. Not someone who is agnostic, like a doctor or a dermatologist that can determine skin lesions and understand different types of skin irritations and say whether or not this is psoriasis, leprosy, or non-leprosy. We're not looking for a medical opinion. We're looking for an opinion coming from the highest person in our community, the Kohen Gadol, and he loves us, and he is the one who's going to tell us whether or not we can stay inside or have to leave the camp. And when we do, he is pained by that, much as we are pained to leave. But we all know that we'll come back, and we all know that the Kohen will be happy when we are all together once again so that we can enjoy each other's company. And that's exactly the reason of the Tzaras HaBayis, the relationship of the Kohen, and all of the wonderful things that come out of things that are terrible, right? We say that from Tzaras, we should have an Atzeres. Atzeres is a holiday. We're going to celebrate very soon an Atzeres, not Shavuos, but we're going to celebrate Pesach. But if you look at the Ramban, he says that Chol HaMoed Pesach is really one long Yontif going right into Shavuos. So it's really one, Ramban really would look at it as one extended holiday, Pesach going into Shavuos. But if we take a look at the word Tzaras, we also have the word Tzara, and there's also in that word Ritzei. So there's a time for supplication. And of course, we have what we call a Nega Tzaras, and the Nega, we all say, Chacham Einav Barosho. And Chacham has his Einav, he has his eyes on the beginning of the word. So if we turn it around, we have Oneg. And we take a Nega, we turn it into an Oneg, right? And then we have what to celebrate. Yes, everyone has trials and tribulations. We all go through different nisyonos in life, different tests, and everyone has different ways of dealing with these things. But the bottom line is that we should be positive framed in our mind, so that we can turn things that are difficult, things that are challenges, behind every challenge lies an opportunity. And we have to be able, as Jews, to always seize opportunity, as we will one day discuss on Parshas Re'eh. Anochi nosem v'chem ayom bracha uklala, the opportunity to always see the bracha and to not make kal of those brachas. Now, I just want to say a few thoughts on the Haggadah. The words, V'hi sha'am dalav aseinu v'lanu. Shalo echad bilvad amar aleinu chalaseinu, ela shebachol davadar omdum aleinu chalaseinu, v'hakarish baruch hu ma'atzeinu miyadam. We all know that the word v'hi has the first level of understanding is simple, yet quite complex. The vav is the sishu shizun mishnah, the hei is the chamshay Torah, the yud is the aseres adibros, and of the Torah itself, and of course echad is emunah and bitachon in hakarish baruch hu. The second level of understanding of the Hisha Amda is that because of this wine that we are raising, we are not having meals with the Umas Olam. And as a result of us being steadfast to our commitment to Torah mitzvahs, we're able to pass on to the next generation the importance of staying within our faith and to decrease intermarriage. We all know that when Moshe Rabbeinu sat down at that table many years ago after, you know, the girl said to him, there's no one to help us at the well. Surely there's no one to help you at the well. Do you know why? Because I, Yisro, don't have any friends anymore. But along came this Mitzri and helped us out, said the girls. No, no, no. Mitzri don't help us. Midyanim don't help us. Why would you think a Mitzri would help you? So go bring him back. And sure enough, it was Moshe Rabbeinu. And very soon thereafter, he ended up marrying Tzipora. So the second you sit down at a meal with people, know that those meals are conduits for marriage. We may not think of it that way, but they surely are. So we always have to be on our best behavior when we have company over. But the third level of the Hisham is a little bit more complex. And that is, and this is more of a Shabbos Shuva drasha, Shabbos Nagadol drasha, something that I think is something apropos for now as well as 6 months prior, that we say that we have three things on Rosh Hashanah, right? We have Imra Lefanei Malchios, Kadesh Tam Nichuni Aleichem, Imra Lefanei Zichonos, Kadesh Tiskarein Lefanei Lechem Latovo, B'mer Bashofar. The Gemara in Rosh Hashanah, Laman Aleph brings down that we should say Malchios, Zechronos, and Shofros. We should anoint Hashem and make him our king. We should remind HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so to speak, of all the chesed that Hashem does for us. And of course, we do this through the shofar itself. So there are three things on Rosh Hashanah. And we also have the three different blasts. We have the Tkiah, the Shvar, and the Teruah. And so we all know that in Rosh Hashanah, we're very much concerned about the Yom HaDin, because that's the season, the reason for the season, as they say. And so therefore, we try to suppress the Din. We try to suppress the Midas HaLakus of the day. How do we do this? We learn this from the word shofar itself. When we say the shofar, when we blast the shofar, the Satan goes running. It's a sound of the army blast, and the Satan doesn't know what to make of it. Is Mashiach coming? Is he not? What's going on? I'm not sure. The same thing when we say Halach Ma'anya, when we speak in Aramaic, we open up our doors to folks that are welcoming, we're welcoming them into our home, and so we're saying Halach Ma'anya. If you didn't eat and you wanted to, you had the Korban Pesach, you're still not full yet, and you still have more room for more food, then come eat by us. When we say these Aramaic words, we also mabalbel the Satan, we confuse the Satan, and that's something very, very powerful. And so when we take a look at the word shofar, we see that the word Elohim is found in shofar three times. Now, you can say to me, how do you see that? So in shofar, you have the vav pei, that's equals 86, right? Elohim is equal to 86. So you have a one-to-one. What if I told you that Elohim also equals 300 as well as 200? It also equals the shin, and it also equals the resh. How would you see that? So if you take the word Elohim and you spell it Miloy, you get Aleph. Aleph Lamed Pei is 111. Lamed is Lamed Mem Dalet is 74. That's 185. Then you have the Hey is Hey Yud, 15. Yud Vav Dalet is 20. And Mem is 80. So there you have 300. Now if I take the same letters and I break it down again, I say Aleph is 1 plus Aleph Lamed is 31. 31 plus 1 is 32. 32 plus 36, Aleph Lamed Hey, equals 68. 68 plus Aleph Lamed Hey Yud is 46, is 114. 114 plus Elohim, 86, equals 200. So now you see the connection between the three levels of shofar and how it connects back to Elohim. Now, why is that important? Because we begin every Rosh Hashanah by saying, Allah Elohim b'tru'ah Adonai b'kol shofar. Right? So what does that mean? That we raise Allah Elohim b'tru'ah. The Elohim is on the Truah. What's the Truah blast? The one who's inconsistent. That, right? One day, interested in doing mitzvahs and matzah tovim. Next day, not so interested in doing mitzvahs and matzah tovim. And then you have the tekiah blast, which is the sound of yashrus. It's one long sound. It's one long sound. What does that tell you? That tells you that day or night, the person is willing to help out. And so that's what we, Allah Elohim b'tru'ah, Hashem Rachmanas, the kol shofar. Right? When is Hashem going to act in Rachmanas? When he hears the sound of the shofar. Which brings us back to a sentence that we say during Chazaras Hashatz of Musaf in Rosh Hashanah, where we say, Kiyato Shomea Kol Shofar, Umaz in Shrua, Vein Do Malach, Baruch Ata Hashem, Shomea Kol Shruas Am Yisrael, Be'ahava. Translated, you hear the sound of the, and this is the Prima Gadim, this is brought down from Rav Chaim HaKohen Rappaport, from the town of Lvov, which has been under attack as of late in Ukraine, on the western side of Ukraine. Everyone there, we're davening, we're learning for them as well. Everything we do is for them as well. So we know that Kiyato Shemei Kol Shofar, you hear the sound of the shofar blast, meaning I hear the sound, says HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the one who is always doing mitzvahs and matzah tovim, but come this time of year, of Rosh Hashanah, Umaz, and Shrua, I listen to the sound of the Shrua, right? So I want to listen to what you're saying. And that's also symbolic of the time of the year, Parshas Hazinu. Hazinu HaShemayim V'adaber V'Sishma Aretz Mesi, right? Says Moshe Rabbeinu, that Hazinu HaShemayim, I can talk into the ears of heaven. I can talk into the ozen of Hashem. This is Shema Aretz. They hear thunder, lightning. They don't know what they don't know anything what's going on. I'm talking to Hashem. What did Yeshaya Nabi say? Sadly, in his generation, he said what? Shimu Shemayim V'Hazini Aretz. He said that I'm talking to the wall. You ever hear that saying? You're talking to the wall? That was Yeshaya Nabi. Shimu Shamayim, that the heavens over here something, but they don't hear much. Vazini Aret, because I'm talking to the ground. People just don't, they just refuse to listen to what I have to say. So here, that's the frustration of Yeshaya Navi, unlike Moshe Rabbeinu, right? But then we turn ourselves around and we say the pasuk, Koz Yeshuos Esa Uvashem Hashem Ekra. The word Koz, we elevate this glass of the Hisha Amda, and we say Koz, what is the Koz? Koz is the Gematria, 86. Are you with me so far? So you have coast, you break the... So what does the coast do? The coast nullifies Elohim. It equals, it does a one-for-one with Elohim. And if you take the 86 of Elohim and you line it up against the coast of the Hishanda. Coast, Yeshua's Esa, that I look forward to my salvation through this coast. How? L'shem Hashem Ekra. Because I'm calling out to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Midas Havaya, which is the Mida of Rachmanes. And that is the messaging that we are imparting with the Hishanda. Like I said, it's a little bit more detailed and complicated, but it's definitely there for us to explore. And so I hope you enjoyed the three levels of the Hishanda. Again, Torah, observance, the next is into marriage, and the third, obviously, is elevating the proximity of Rachmanes, while at the same time balancing it against Elokus, so that we end up with a favorable judgment, because we all know that Nisan, the month of Nisan, is the month of miracles, right? And we say that it's preceded by Adar. Adar is Ani Hashem Rofecha, and then we have Nisan, and then we have Iyar is also Ani Hashem Rofecha. So this is the time of Refuas and Yeshuas, and people who need it, Hashem should have it. And that's what we say, the Hishamda Labasenu, Kos Yeshuas Esa, Uvashem Hashem Ekra, that we should be always be under the realm of Rachmanes. And the last thing to say, as we close out 25 minutes of the Shir, is Baruch HaMakom Baruch Hu. Now, these two topics, by the way, I spent an hour speaking at a Pesach program back in 2014. It was a beautiful program, but sadly Chaim Pearl passed away. Otherwise, it probably would be going back to someplace near the Canadian border. But the idea is as follows. Baruch HaMakom Baruch Hu. We say, K'neged Abar Banam Dibra Torah, Echad Chacham, Echad Rasha, Echad Tam, Echad Shein Yodei Lashon. And what's the obvious question? Why do you have to say the word Echad? Four times. You can't say, K'neged Abar Banam Dibra Torah, colon, and then you say, Chacham, Rasha, Tam, Shein Yodei Lashon. Why do you have to say the word Echad four times? So Chazal bring down, and it's a very powerful lesson. If you take the word Echad, the gematria of Echad is what? 13. If you take Echad, you multiply by 4, what do you get? You get 52. What does 52 tell you? Ben, the son. Now, there are times when a person is growing up, and a person says, well, you know, at the time the parent gets a call, your son is acting like a real chacham, right? He's upslugging the Rebbe, he's making the Rebbe nuts. And then sometimes you get another phone call, no, your son was misbehaving today. And, you know, he was acting in a way that wasn't so becoming of a person that we want him to become. And then as the person gets older, you know, my mom has a nice little sticker on her refrigerator that says, a wise person knows what to say, and a smart person knows whether to say it. That's a Tom, that's a Shein Yodei Lashon. And the messaging over there is very simple. As we get older, we really do know what's going on in our grandchildren's lives, our children's lives. We know what kind of trials and tribulations they're going through. But sometimes we act as though we don't know. And we do that for their own benefit, because we know that it might be uncomfortable for them to raise certain topics and to discuss them with us. We have the experience. We have the understanding. We have the knowledge. We have the guidance to give. But sometimes we're not asked for that. And so therefore we have to be very sensitive, not to give away too much, but to allow them the time and space so that they feel comfortable coming to us and asking us the questions that we know that they need answers to. And we're more than happy to give them those answers, provide them with that guidance, but we need them to sometimes make the first step. And that's the time. And that's the Shein Yodei Lashon. I don't know how to ask the question, so you know what? I'd rather not ask it. There's nothing wrong with that. Doesn't mean that you don't know what's going on. It means you're quite knowledgeable, but you're very selective in what you're sharing. But you're more than welcome to share when you're, you know, approached. So we have to think that every one of us is those four children. Different spheres of life. Experiences allow us to reflect upon and understand that the best way to communicate with children, especially during the Yontif of Pesach, Pesach is Pesach, open up your mouth and to speak. And sometimes all year we may not be speaking as openly as we wish or feel comfortable doing, but Pesach is a time when we have to open up and share with our children around the table, not just what's in the Agada, but also outside of the Agada, you know, how to coach people forward in a most positive and productive way. So in that way, I want to wish everyone a Chag Kosher V'Sameach, and to briefly recap on what we discussed tonight. Number one, we talked about the birds. We have to remember always the second bird to remind ourselves how we can use our time productively, constructively, and in a positive way. Number two, we spoke about full sacrifice, which means that when we do the sacrifice, we know that we're going to get back one for one, and that we won't feel any pain as a result. We'll actually be rejoicing in that opportunity. And then we switched over to the Hishamda and Abba Banim. And to recap, number one, we spoke about Torah into marriage. Then third is Rachmanes. And of course, fourth, the Abba Banim, which is the blessing of children themselves, so that we can enjoy all of the rustle and the bustle that go about with raising kids, but with an understanding that, yes, we have to be open-minded, and sometimes you know, we have to reflect upon ourselves as being every one of those four components of our Rabbanim, because they are the composite of Ben, which is Son. I wanted to wish everyone again a wonderful Chag Kasher V'Sameach, and Mordechai Plotzker wishing you and everyone joining us a joyous, happy, festive, and relaxing Yom Tov of Pesach.